understand the disciples being upset with James and John for what they did. None of them really understood what Jesus was about. None of them truly comprehended what it meant to follow Jesus. Now, they had given up so much to do so. They left family and friends and home and work to follow this itinerant rabbi of Nazareth. They had experienced with amazement God's presence in his life, God's love in his words, God's grace in his healings, his forgiveness, his feeding of the thousands. They had come face to face with true, pure, life-transforming, divine presence in Jesus. The true revelation of God. They couldn't deny Jesus. And even though they knew all this was true, they still didn't get it. They still missed the point. Now, we really shouldn't be that hard on them. They grew up in a society that had a particular understanding of who and what the Messiah was supposed to be. The Messiah had a very specific job description. The Messiah was supposed to overthrow the Roman occupation of Judea and reestablish the kingdom of David, not just over the Mediterranean basin or the Mediterranean world, but over the entire world. The Messiah was also supposed to overthrow the corruption of the religious leadership of the day and to reestablish right worship in the temple in Jerusalem. And the Messiah was to overthrow social and cultural corruption and reestablish justice and righteousness amongst the people. So the Messiah had this three-pronged job: defeat the Romans, defeat the corrupt religious leaders, and defeat sin. This was the Messiah's job, and especially that first one, overthrowing the Roman occupation and setting up the new kingdom of David here on earth. That was the Messiah's job, and the Messiah was going to be king over it, to be ruler over it, to be head of it. And so it was important to be right there with the Messiah. The disciples, the 12, are going to be his lieutenants, his right and left hand men. And that was what they were on the ground floor. That was what they were there for. To learn from Jesus, to be taught by Jesus, to be led by Jesus in this movement, this messianic movement. This messianic movement that would overthrow the Romans, that overthrown the priests of the temple, the corrupt rabbis of the synagogue, and overthrow sin, unrighteousness, and injustice amongst the people. That was what they understood. That was the Jewish way of looking at the Messiah, the anointed one of God. This was what they were expecting. That's why James and John came to Jesus. That's why James and John came to Jesus to ask for the best seats at his right and his left hand. His best seats in glory. When he is glorified, when he is king over the new kingdom of David, he's defeated the Romans, defeated the priests and the rabbis, and defeated injustice and unrighteousness in the land, then they would get to sit at his right and left hand and pass out judgment and pass out rules and regulations and lord it over the people. No wonder the other 10 were mad. Now, over in Matthew's gospel, it has a different version of the story where it says that it's not James and John who come to Jesus to ask for the position. They send their mom. I guess they said, you know, mom, we could never tell mom no, so Jesus might not tell mom no either. So they send their mom, Mrs. Zebedee, to ask for the chief seats in the kingdom. I always find that a little strange. The specific expectation was one of power. That's what they expected. That was what they were looking for. who would have that power? So I get the complaining. I get the upsetness on the part of the disciples. And I also understand James and John's quick response to Jesus' question. After they asked him this, he says, "You do not know what you're asking." You mean you think you know what you're asking for? You think you know what to expect here, but you don't really know what you're asking for. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink? Are we baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with? And they replied, "We are able." Yeah, right. That's what you say now when we're out here in a wilderness, when we're traveling from place to place, when I'm preaching and teaching and healing and feeding. That's what you say now. But what will you say in the garden when they come to arrest me? What will you do then? We know what they did. They ran away. They ran off into the night. Peter tried to fight. He pulled out a sword and chopped off the servant of the high priest. They chopped off his ear, Malchus's ear. Whack, gone. James and John were amongst those that ran into the night in fear. And Jesus' reply to them, when they said, "We are able," he says, "Yes, you'll drink the cup that I'm going to drink. Yes, you'll be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized." Yeah. These are going to happen to you. They may say they're able, just like we say we're able. We even have a hymn in our hymnals, number 530. "Lord, we are able, our spirits are thine. Remold them, make us like thee divine. Thy guiding radiance above us shall be a beacon to God, to love and loyalty." Really, we're not able. But we're willing to be made able. We're willing to be made, transformed, able to do this. We know, if we're honest, we know we're not. That's what's implied in this hymn's refrain. "Remold them, make us like thee, divine. A beacon to God, to love and loyalty." We know we're not there yet, but your grace can make us there. Being a servant isn't about rulership. It's not about being in charge. It's about being open to God's will. It's about being open to the needs of others. It's about being willing to set yourself and your own ideas and your own agenda aside and do what is right for others. Follow the best that you can God's will for you and for others. When I was in the monastic community back in the 1990s in Boston, they had a song there that we deeply loved in the community. It was written by Richard Gilliard back in 1977. It became very popular very quickly amongst Christians. It's called the Servant Song. "Will you let me be your servant? Let me be as Christ to you. Pray that I may have the grace to let you be my servant too. We are pilgrims on a journey. We are travelers on the road. We are here to help each other walk the mile and bear the load. I will hold the Christ light for you in the nighttime of your fear. I will hold my hand out to you. Speak the peace you long to hear. I will weep when you are weeping. When you laugh, I'll laugh with you. I will share your joy and sorrow. till we've seen this journey through. When we sing to God in heaven, we shall find such harmony, born of all we've known together, of Christ's love and agony. Will you let me be your servant? Let me be as Christ to you. Pray that I may have the grace to let you be my servant too. That's the servant song. It's not about holding the best seats in the kingdom. It's not about being chief amongst the chiefs of the kingdom. It's not about wearing the robes and the stoles and the other finery of the kingdom. I know that's what's common, and I know that's what we expect. The stole is often thought of as being the symbol of pastoral authority, the symbol of the order of elders, of the presbyterate of the church. But it's not. It's not a symbol or a badge of authority. The robe I'm wearing right now, this kind of robe, it's called a Geneva robe, it's a symbol of education. The bars on the side indicate that I have a doctoral degree, a PhD, piled higher and deeper, as they sometimes say. This is a symbol of education. I have a hood that goes with it that's a symbol of education. And it's garment. You know, you will rarely see me preach without a vestment on of some kind because I feel naked. One day I was preaching back in my early ministry, and I was preaching in shirt sleeves like I am right now, and at Kingston United Methodist Church in Hunt County. And in the middle of my sermon, old Reverend Freeman Pearson, retired preacher, stands up and says, "Reverend Neal, your fly is open." Whoops, I got behind the pulpit and checked. Yep, there it was. Ever since then, I've always been a little bit nervous about preaching without checking. Just a second. Okay, good. We're all right. This is a symbol of education. In the judicial world, it's a symbol of authority, the authority of a judge. That's why a lot of pastors don't like these kinds of robes, because it seems like it's overbearing. I'll tell you, in the summer, they're very hot. This is a symbol of the order of elder, of the order of presbyter. It's called a stole. But it's not a symbol of authority or power. It's often thought of that, but it's not. Let me put this over here. This is a symbol not of authority and power, but a symbol of service, a reminder of service. Because one of the things that Jesus did on the night that they had Holy Communion, the night they had that last Passover Seder before Jesus was handed over and crucified and died, as he gathered the disciples together, he took a towel and he wrapped it around his waist. And then he knelt before them and washed their feet. The stole is a symbol and a reminder of service, that I am called to serve you as together we serve a broken and hurting world with the love of God, as together we serve God as witnesses to the love of God for all. The stole is a reminder and a symbol that I am called to serve. And that reminder of service is worn around the neck as a yoke, sometimes called the yoke of obedience, the yoke of service. It's worn around the neck to remind ourselves that as we serve, Christ's hands are on us. And through us, Christ's hands reach out to all the world. James and John, we can forgive them. They didn't know this. Jesus reminds them of it repeatedly, demonstrates it repeatedly in his ministry, and that we are called to be in service to others, serving God and serving neighbor, loving God and loving neighbor. So I get that the 10 were upset. I get that they were mad. And yes, James and John answered, "We're able," but they had no conception of what it would be that they would be called to serve and to drink the cup that Christ drank, the cup of death and of life eternal. We are called to serve. We are called to serve as Christ serves. We are called to serve others, the children of God, with the grace that we have received. Sisters and brothers, let me be your servant. Let me be as Christ to you. Pray that I might have the grace to let you be my servant too. In the name of the Father, and of the Son,
let me dwell.